This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisan and Noel Lim. 7:36 a.m. Friday the 16th of April. And in about half an hour, as we do every weekday, we have the breakfast grill happening after the 8 o'clock news. Noel, why don't you tell us who's going to come on the grill today?
Well, so Wong Xiaoneng will be discussing with Bradley Hope, the co-author of the book Blood and Oil, on Prince Mohammed Salman of Saudi Arabia. As we know, he has emerged as one of the most powerful leaders of the Middle East, appointed as Crown Prince in 2017 at the age of 32, Salman, or MBS as he is known, brought with him a bold economic vision and reforms, but also a ruthless political strategy to consolidate power. So, I think Xiaoneng is going to be exploring, you know, what drives his ambition. And just some background information about our guest this morning, Bradley Hope. He's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist and also co-author of the infamous book, The Billion Dollar Whale, about 1MDB.
So that's going to be a very interesting conversation happening later on after the 8 o'clock news bulletin, so be sure to stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, you are probably using a semiconductor right now, listening to our show on the radio in your car, your smartphone, or on your laptop. And it is the integral part of the microchips that make devices work. But unfortunately, the explosion in demand for devices because people need to work at home, plus a supply shock due to supply chain disruptions, have led to an extreme shortage in the supply of microchips.
And the shortage has caused car companies to halt production and made getting graphic cards for PCs a headache. Apple also faced a significant supply constraint in its rollout of new products, and President Joe Biden seems to be pushing to help the US chip industry fix the semiconductor shortage with his new $1 trillion infrastructure deal. However, with China's plan to establish its own semiconductor supremacy, how will it all pan out, and what kind of global effects will the semiconductor war between the East and West have?
For more on this morning we're speaking with Abhishek Prakash, a leading technology and politics consultant at the Center for Innovating the Future, on the line with us. Good morning, Abhishek. Thanks for joining us today. So US President Joe Biden has initiated a drive to bring manufacturing back to American soil in order to regain leadership in this sector. But how likely is this to actually happen?
Well, thanks for having me. The big competition right now is over technology, and it's right now being fought between the U.S. and China. China needs technology to challenge the U.S. world order, and the U.S. needs technology to almost re-Americanize and reinforce its power in the world. And at the center of this is chips. Now, the U.S., because of COVID-19, has become extremely concerned that it's over-reliant on China for many things, whether it's PPE or medications, or even the manufacturing of semiconductors and the raw materials that go into these semiconductors. So now President Biden wants to bring chip making home, except China wants its own chip semiconductors. Europe doesn't want American technology. And countries like Japan and India are building their technologies, including chips, independently. So who is this independent chip making in the U.S. really going to benefit? That's the question in front of the U.S. officials.
And who will be that independent party that will be the winner? Will it be maybe countries in Taiwan or South Korea?
Well, countries like Taiwan and South Korea and companies in these countries like TSMC in Taiwan or Samsung in South Korea, they've been used to a world where there was deep integration, where economic barriers were brought down, where everybody could trade and sell with one another. At the same time, they operated neutrally. They didn't pick sides in geopolitics. Now, as technology transforms geopolitics, companies are going to be picking sides, and companies and countries are going to become cut off from one another. So the big question is, who are TSMC and Samsung going to side with? And right now, they're choosing the U.S.
So China has earmarked trillions of dollars to develop its own semiconductor capabilities with a goal of 70% domestic production. I think overall, they want chip self-reliance, self-sufficiency. Overall, do you think this is a viable plan? And how does this factor into the U.S.'s own goals for its own semiconductor leadership plans?
Well, there's a really stunning data point that I was told, which is in 2019, China spent $238 billion on oil imports. And in the same year, it spent $301 billion on semiconductors. So just think about that for a second, that China is spending more on semiconductors and chips than it is on oil. And that's how critical chips are to what China wants to do, whether it's by the 2030s have autonomous submarines around the world, or whether it's deploying industrial robots throughout its society. But China needs chips for everything. The big challenge that China faces is that almost all chip making is currently controlled by the U.S. So what the U.S. is doing is it's putting pressure on an area where it knows China will feel the pain. And any U.S. officials that think that they're going to stop China from producing chips or that they've permanently paralyzed China are wrong. What they've done is they've slowed China down and they're forcing China to look inward like never before.
So given that China is so bent on investing in chips, and back to your earlier comment, why would TSMC, and I think you mentioned Samsung, why would they side with the U.S.? Is it because U.S. is applying a lot of political power on them?
Well, the corporate strategies of many companies is changing. You have a big bank in the U.S. called Wells Fargo, and they told their employees to ban to remove WeChat from their phones. They don't want their employees to have this Chinese app. So companies are now thinking differently. They're willing to pick sides, and they're willing, at the same time, companies like TSMC and Samsung don't want to get caught in the U.S. sanctions. That's what's really challenging many of these companies, is they don't want to end up getting fined or punished by doing business with companies that are on the U.S. blacklist.
And where does this put, I guess, countries in Southeast Asia, right? Because, we talk about choosing sides between U.S. and China and a lot of other factors. It looks like the semiconductor supply chain could increasingly get politicized as time goes on. Where does it put countries like Malaysia and Southeast Asia in general in the navigation between these two powers?
Well, Malaysia is in a very interesting place. For the past 3 years, China has been selling Malaysia a lot of artificial intelligence. Kuala Lumpur has CityBrain operating, which is an Alibaba's AI system. You have Malaysian police forces buying facial recognition cameras from Chinese startups. You have SenseTime, which is the largest facial recognition company in the world from China, building a $1 billion AI park in Malaysia. So the question in front of Malaysia is, in this era where technology is underpinning geopolitics, or what I call next geopolitics, what role does Malaysia want to play? Does it want to play a neutral role? Does it want to play a role where it's almost looked at as a domino? Or does it want to carve out a space for itself where it can take the lead and it can have its own geopolitical strategy?
What do you think is a strategy that makes sense for Malaysia? From what I understand, just to give some context, is that most Malaysian companies are investing in North Asia. And that could be because they are mainly OSATs.
Malaysia, right now, when it comes to technology, one area where Malaysia has been investing some money is drones, in terms of military drones. And so the question in front of Malaysian officials is, what are the niche areas, whether they are AI chips, whether it's autonomous drones, whether it's other technologies that are not really being discussed yet, for example, virtual reality, where Malaysia can invest money, where especially important, where Malaysia can procure talent. Talent is becoming a battlefield between nations as companies and countries fight over the top engineers and computer scientists. So it all really depends on what the vision of Malaysia is.
So maybe we just wrap up this conversation with a look at why the U.S. still has supremacy in the chip wars, right? Because they went to 5 nanometers with some of the tech companies before China did. Why the gap?
Well, China is, when it comes to chips, where Chinese chips are a decade where Chinese software was. So a decade ago, nobody thought China could build software that could rival the U.S., whether it's Windows or Android or iOS. Now, however, China is building software. So the question is, what is China's plan when it comes to catching up with the U.S. Now, there's two levels to this. The first is when it comes to certain semiconductors, China has been operating, expecting its relationship with the U.S. never to fundamentally change so fast. And with Trump, it did. Technology became the new theme. Technology started driving relations. And the Chinese were caught off guard in how fast its companies could be put in the crosshairs. So now when it comes to, let's call it traditional chips, China is navigating very unfamiliar territory. But the other level is that there are certain chips that China is building independently from the beginning. For example, Alibaba has created AI chips that it's using for cloud computing. So there are two parts to this, two sides of the coin. And the big question is, how fast can China build the main chips that it needs that it's still relying on the U.S. for?
Right. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Abhishur. That was Abhishur Prakash, leading technology and politics consultant at the Center for Innovating the Future. We're heading into some messages now, and then up next, a look at all the latest developments around COVID-19. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.